Welcome, welcome, welcome to all of our two and four-legged furry friend listeners to What the Bark, the Rightpaw podcast. I'm your host, Nathan Oliveri from Rightpaw, and joining me as always, my co-host and good friend, Genetic George. George, welcome again to What the Bark.
Hey, Nathan. Yes, welcome and welcome to all the listeners. Oh, remind me, Nathan, you're good at numbers. What episode are we up to?
We are on episode 15, if you can believe it.
15. Wow. Look, my family thought it wouldn't last six episodes, but hey, we've defied critics. We're going 15. You know, I can't wait till we pop up in the champagne on the 100th episode.
That's it. We're getting bigger and better. And as we grow, we're also getting more and more guests, and we're getting more and more emails about people with topics to tune in and to have on the podcast. And I think the one we've got today is a really, really exciting one.
Yeah, it's interesting. I'd like to do an analysis of our guests and see who's leading. Is it developmental breeders versus traditional breeders versus guests versus, you know, we could sort of break down and see what we've got, Nathan.
I think maybe we'll have to do a poll at some point for sure.
Yes, poll. Yes, excited to have a guest on because the topic of today is something that will interest pretty much every breeder.
Absolutely. It's about the birth, the origin, the start of every puppy journey. It starts from whelping, which is a word that I must admit I had before I joined the breeding world. I'd never heard the term whelping. I didn't know what it meant. I wasn't sure what it was referring to. But it is obviously the start, the birthing process of a pup. And we thought, who better to join us on this episode than a breeder who's really spent a lot of time building her whelping area. She's put a lot of focus on the start of the journey. And we were just chatting before the episode started about how she's completely moved house and built her puppy whelping area from the ground up. I'm giving her a big intro and she's staring at me thinking, oh my God, how am I going to live up to this? But she's fantastic. Joe from Monty's Moodles, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you, Nathan and George. It's actually lovely to be here. It's always a topic I get very excited about talking about. So I'm very honoured. Thank you.
And Joe, it's Joe from Monty's Moodles.
Monty's Moodles and Cavoodles now.
That's true.
You know, only been in the last 6 to 12 months, but yeah, mostly Moodles. Yes.
So just the burning question, why Monty's?
So Monty is our older dog, D6 dog. My husband constantly growls at me like, why did we get him D6'd? Between you and I, he's not breeding quality anyway. So I just keep saying, I know, babe, it's very unfortunate. But he is our original Moodle. So we've named everything after him because he's basically what started our journey.
Okay, so but Monty's really the start of it all, D6'd. Moodle, and just for those uneducated listeners, Joe, what is a Moodle?
A Moodle is a cross between a Maltese and a poodle, usually a toy poodle, but you can get some miniature poodle in there as well.
Okay, and just for some of those listeners, Nathan, I have done a bit of Googling, and you're right, these words we come across like whelping, giving birth, I believe it's of Germanic origin, the word.
There you go. You're doing better than me. I didn't even know that. I can't even take it back to its origin. That's great.
Joe, one thing you'll find when we do these podcasts is that I do all the research and Nathan does absolutely nothing. He organises everything, but I'm the one that's got all the facts, does hours and hours of research, and Nathan just comes in, and it's...
I'm here to learn. I'm here to learn. And George, there have been instances where you've been called out by the guests as well. So
yeah, that's right.
George, you're just here to make everybody else look good, aren't you? Is that you do your research?
Well, that's right. Yeah, and make them look good. So good job. Yes, that's just so. Yeah, whelping. That word, whelping. It is an interesting topic, which is to give birth, and I'm excited to listen about not just when it comes to Moodles, but whelping in general and how we go about it. So, Monty's Moodles and Joe, we're keen to listen to how all this happens. So. Maybe start about, you've moved home and you've got currently a whelping. How do you set up your whelping?
Well, we were lucky, I guess, to start with. We had a bit of a base. So what Nathan said before about building it from the base up, not quite true, but we bought a house that had already a shed that had a third of it converted into four kennels and a laundry type area. and an open space in the middle. So it was not set up for breeding at all. So we had to really go in there and look, okay, what have we got, and work with what we had. That can be really good or really bad, because some aspects I was like, I wouldn't have done it this way, and we had to adapt and change things and make them work. But it was really great to have that foundation. So, yes.
I mean, I set up a little nesting box for my cockatiels. And, you know, is a whelping box or a nesting box for dogs, is it just something more in a bigger scale? May starting, do I, if I was to go to Bunnings, what would be the list of items I'd need to get started if I was going to start? I'm keeping it simple.
Probably wouldn't go to Bunnings.
Okay. Well, there you go.
There are some great whelping businesses that are set up and purpose built for breeders.
We actually started off building our own whelping boxes, and the key thing to think about is that you want them to be really easy to clean. So you want to use materials that you can disinfect easily, that you can wipe down easily. You want the size to be appropriate for your dog. Obviously, I breed small dogs, so my whelping boxes, the ones I originally built, were 1 meter by 1 meter. I've had to go down to 80 by 80 now, just due to the size of the kennels that I've got, but I'm actually finding those to be fantastic. So there's that to think about. You also need to think about safety. So the reason why whelping boxes, if you've ever seen them, have sort of the tubing or something around the inside of it a wee way off the ground, is so that the mum doesn't actually lean against and squash the puppies against the background, because that can be a real concern, is that they don't mean to, but they sort of lean on them and the puppies can suffocate. So there's a few different things you need to think about when building them. So the first ones that we did were custom made, cost me a fortune, only to find that they didn't fit in the new place. So that was not great, but we started again. But the new ones I've got, I got from Pet Network. I don't know if we're allowed to name places.
Go ahead. Yeah, we're looking for sponsors. You just ruined Bunnings for me, though. You killed Bunnings.
Bunnings is great if you've got your own ability to build, but if you don't, then it's very easy. I picked up my welcome boxes for $175 each. And they actually are brilliant, because you can pull different aspects off them. So you can have them the four sides up, or you can take things out so that there's three sides or two sides. And as the puppies progress in age, you can adapt that welcome box to fit what you want. So they're fantastic.
Expand and build it.
You can expand and build it and add things onto it. You can get two and make it bigger. So.
And I mean, it's probably, I'm going to go back to the simple and obvious question, which is why do you need a whelping area? You know, what's the importance of having that right whelping set up, you know, separate, you know, to the other dog areas? You know, what's critical about having a whelping area in the first place?
Well, first of all, you need the mum to be somewhere where they are comfortable. It's really important, and it's even in the, you know, the code.
The DPI, the new set, yeah.
Yes.
The new it's really important. It actually says that you need to have the mother separated from the other dogs in a quiet area. And there's a reason for that, because you don't want the mums to be anxious. They do get very, very protective of their puppies, and they do obviously can get anxious when giving birth. So you want them to feel in the best place where they, you know, you can nurture them and look after them and they feel comfortable. So that's one of the first things. Secondly, I think if you've got a space where you've got all the things that you need on hand, so there's no good being in your lounge area and something happens and you need to access something that, you know, for an emergency, whatever you need, your aspirator or whatever you need, and then having to run down to your dog area to grab that, to run back to the lounge to, you know, because there's actually a lot of supplies. Well, I probably oversupplied, but that's just my nature. There's a lot of things that you need. So having things on hand in the one space is great. Also, you can then, once the mother's given birth, you use that area for the puppies to grow and adapt and change. So.
So I suppose it's, from what you're saying, it's monitoring. Do you have cameras set up to monitor? And
absolutely, yes. I've got a camera in every pen I've got, and I've also got a camera in the sort of external sides and internal communal areas as well.
So from what you're saying, and the discussion I had with Dion before this podcast was, what's wrong with the wax box and some cut newspaper? It doesn't suffice today as a whelping.
It doesn't hold up.
It doesn't really cut it, but it also doesn't meet the code. And this is the thing I think a lot of people don't realise, is that you only have to have one litter and you can get audited by the RSPCA. So it's about doing the right thing, but it's about also, and the code is there for a reason. So, you know, people have these, I've seen it on Facebook, you know, hundreds of times, they have a little playpen that they've just bought and they've got their mother in there and in a little pool. Now, look, you can get away with that. You can absolutely have puppies and raise beautiful puppies doing that, but it doesn't actually meet the criteria that you have to have.
So, Joe, then, if there was certain key criteria, just give me three key things that you believe every whelping area, if you had the tick, 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 if you think it, to get started.
Top three. Ooh, that's a hard one. So obviously you need a welcome box.
Let's define size. It's got to be the right size. You can't have a small whelping box for a large dog. So no. It's basically this.
I would say, and I don't know the exact, you know, rules here, but I know that I would say 2 to 2.5 times the size of your dog.
Okay.
Maybe width wise would be what I would base it off. And so other than a whelping box, I actually think the security camera is right up there.
So something to be able to observe them and make sure that there's...
Absolutely, because you can't be sitting there watching the dog. I mean, even when I go out, if I know I've got a bitch that is, you know, due to come to have babies soon, I'm on the camera every you know, so often, just checking, you know, what's happening, what behaviours is she showing me, things like that, so I know whether I need to get home in that near future or whether I'm all right. I mean, usually, you know, I try very hard to stay around close to the birth date, but you can't always. So the camera is definitely one. Beyond that, it gets very hard, number three, because I think there's so many things, but obviously having, I have a heat lamp and
temperature control.
Air conditioning, making sure, because you have to have that right.
You've answered it perfectly. In fact, that's the third, and probably the most important is temperature, heat, and including, you know, the last thing you want is you don't want them exposed to cold or hot environments. So I honestly think that's probably one of the most important things when you're setting up in it, is to make sure you've got the right comfortable environment temperature-wise.
Yes, absolutely.
So there's a three, really. It's a size, temperature, and what was the third one? Remind me, Joe.
Visibility, really. Camera, just being able to see the dog and know what's going on. Yeah. And I'll give you a little example of a story once. This was after puppies were born. And again, this was sort of, we've learned along the way about all various things. Puppies can squeeze in anywhere. They are amazing. So every time we sort of thought we had our pens finished, and we're like, yep, no, it's all secure, you know, we would find another space where a puppy could squeeze out. Amazing. And we had put some panels between the two pens so that the mothers can't see each other, because they don't want to be looked in on by other dogs. And I hadn't taken away the original wire that was there, and I was looking in on the camera, and I see this puppy go up to this where the wire was and squeeze through the smallest little gap that it could. I was like, how on earth? And it literally got stuck between the panel and the mesh. And I couldn't believe it had managed to squeeze through there. But I was like, thank goodness I was watching when that happened. And, you know, that I do regularly check. And I mean, the puppy was fine when it went to there, just kind of lying there like, stuck, can't get out. But it was, we were able to obviously remove that and adapt it. You know, and I still thought, how long would the puppy have been there for if I couldn't see it? So I know that's not whelping, but it's still, you know, the importance of being able to visibly see what's going on in your areas.
Interesting.
Yeah, absolutely. I guess, you know, you know, we touched on this before, but you moved house recently and you would have had to have, you know, basically rethought how you were going to have those areas set up. So what planning went into, you know, setting up your new home, your new whelping area, you know, for those breeders out there that, you know, maybe starting out or maybe looking at how they can revamp their areas, you know, how did you start to think through it and you know, build your setup?
Sure. There are a few factors. So one is safety. So each time, again, looking at being able to secure different areas, making sure that there's no harsh wires and everything sticking out that puppies or dogs could get injured by. A key thing for me was if you've got, you know, more than one or two litters, you need different areas for different things. So you've got the whelping area and where the puppies kind of sleep and eat and do their playing originally, but they get bigger and they need more space. Yeah. So it's not just about having these little kennels or these, you know, little play pens. It's about, well, what's going to happen when they sort of get their legs and they need more than that. So we have four kennels, and out from one side of the kennels internally, we have an internal area where we can let the puppies out and they can play in there and move around and interact with other puppies or other dogs. And then from the other side, we've got a pet door that we obviously start with. We just hook it up so the puppies can go get in and out, and they go down a little ramp, and that goes into a little outside area of their own. And then from those areas, we've then each two pens links up to a big outdoor play zone, which we call it. And that is basically where we've got a whole lot of interactive toys and heights and lots of stuff for the puppies to do. So for me, it was working out all the different stages that puppies go through and what I wanted to achieve, and then sort of working out how we do that, how we put it all together.
It's interesting. So you take them out when they're at a certain age and you socialise them a bit more. And from what you're just saying too, it sounds like there's a lot of supervision of them too, especially in the first. You know, I know I'm going to get back to my cockatiels because it's the only thing I've ever bred. And, you know, you go and you have a look at them and you monitor them. Is that something you do with your puppies? Do you sort of weigh them regularly? Do you go in and have a look and make sure that they're progressing at a consistent stage and whatever? And is that something you also do? Is that part of
Definitely. So obviously at the beginning you do that really regularly, twice a day to start with, and then so you can go down to once a day. Generally, if I'm happy with how they're putting on weight by the 2 week mark, I then just do them weekly unless I feel concerned about anything. But yes, weighing them regularly, and also just checking them physically, making sure they, you know, haven't got really runny bottoms or you know, gunky eyes, or just general observing of the puppies.
You've got to look, it's because something I've read is that close to 50% of deaths at birth or deaths at first is usually from poor supervision. You haven't monitored.
I can believe that. So again, if you've got a whelping box that doesn't have the bars bit on it, if the mum squashes it, or if it's over hot and you haven't realised that the temperature's not right, or the puppy isn't feeding properly, you actually have to go and I'm up for the first couple of nights, you know, every couple of hours. Are they all feeding? Are they all on the nipples? Because it can only take, you know, 24 hours of one puppy not feeding very well, and then it's you're working overtime. You're behind. You're working overtime. The puppy's already weak, and you know, you then it's a big struggle to get the puppy to feed. So those essential, that first few days is completely essential in being able to make sure that all the puppies are on the right track.
See, Nathan, that's this breeding thing is so hard, isn't it? We all think it's easy. Everyone sees the puppy part at the end, but you know, you've gone through a huge process.
Absolutely. And George, you probably don't know this, but my family actually have one of Joe's dogs.
So we I did not
know that. A Moodle, but she's one of my only not Moodles.
Yes. Well, she's a gorgeous Moodle cross. Her name's Abby, named after Abbey Road, because my dad is a big Beatles fan. I've had the privilege of actually going down to visit Joe and seeing her set up, and obviously I think that was at her previous house, but you know, seeing the effort that she'd put into her setup, and obviously being able to have one of her dogs has been fantastic as well. I think Joe, maybe for those of us who haven't been and seen your setup, talk us through, you know, when you're walking into your whelping area, what's in there? What do you see? You know, you've got the box, you've got the heat lamp, you've got the cameras. What's in that area? Give us a bit of a walkthrough.
Yep. Okay. Well, basically, heading in, I've got a room to start with that is basically, as I said, like a laundry washroom. I have all of my grooming things there. I've got a grooming table. I've got the washing machine, dryer, all sorts of things there. All my disinfectants, all that kind of thing. So I'm constantly washing bedding, towels. You know, you name it, it's going through to wash. Then you go through into my actual whelping area. And one of the key things I didn't mention before is I cannot recommend enough storage, like something that we don't often think about. Even when we build houses, we forget about storage, I think. So I've got all the way down one side of my whelping area is just shelving and cupboards because there's so much stuff. And
you said you need everything at your fingertips.
I want it all there. And it's those sort of storage things you don't necessarily think about. It's so essential.
We were getting our laundry redone, and the first thing my partner wanted to know about storage, you don't have enough cupboard space.
No.
In fact, for anyone who's looking at selling a property, it's something a lot of people look at. Is the storage space that you have, because it's one of the, especially when you've got a particular home that's an older style. But sorry to get into property 101 here, Nathan. Storage is
massive. But it's true. It's massive. And, you know, and also organizing your storage. Like, I am a very organized person. I come from a teaching background, so I think it's just built in me. But, you know, I can see I've got containers that I can take in and grab. That's all my whelping essentials. So things that I will need for the birth. And then I've got, you know, boxes for if something goes wrong and I need to bottle feed. I've got all of the teats and the supplies and the milk replacements and everything in there. And then I've got another one for worming and fleeing and tick treatment. And then one for general medicines and bandages and things. And I've got them all there labeled clearly so I can just grab. I've got sections that hold my heat lamps and heat pads and all the stuff I need in my whelping boxes. So all of the puppy mats and I use fake grass mats. There's the towels. There's even my sections for when the puppies get older, the interactive mats and interactive feeding,
mats, feeding
things like, you know, and then I've got storage for all my outdoor stuff that comes in and out as I've got puppies. So just the list goes on. So yeah,
this is like OCD.
Yeah. I am totally OCD.
OCD. Okay. You are, you?
But it's good. I mean,
I've got, as I said, I've got stuff that I may never need. I've got the aspirator and resuscitator and things. I'm hoping I never need to use it, but I know that if it's sitting on the shelf, I probably won't. But if I don't have it sitting on the shelf, I probably will. So I'm going to have it if I could possibly need it.
It's interesting because I thought there might have been a bit of OCD in you, Joe, because I looked at your website and I noticed these bow ties you put on all your
colour coordinate.
Every colour, it was like another. I go, what is it? And just every colour. What is with this bow tie thing? Please explain. I was going, what? Is that how you are?
Part of it is an identification thing. Yeah. So I actually my Facebook page, I don't post a huge amount. I've got a family page that people that own my dogs go on to
You do that very well, by the way. I did see that.
Thank
very
you.
Well done.
So that one I actually do most of my posting on, and I do regular updates, videos, photos and things. And with their weekly updates, I sort of choose a colour when the puppy's 1 week old, and I stick with that theme all the way through for that puppy so that it can be easily identified. Some litters, they're easy to tell apart, and others, they're really not. So the people looking in, they want to know what one's my dog or what one's that one, you know, and see them develop.
And do you get these bow ties made specifically for you?
I literally bought them a bulk. I think it was from like Wish or somewhere. They were certainly inexpensive, but
But they make all the difference. You've got, you know, Mr. Green, Miss Purple, Mr. Red. Like it's great, and it really, like, you know, makes all the pups look very professional.
I dropped off Mary to a groomer just before Christmas, and when I picked her up, they'd stuck a bow tie with little bells, jingle bells, a Christmas bow tie on her, and
I've got some with bells too. Unnecessary, but look, it's all about. Sometimes presentation is actually important. So
yeah, well, it's true. I mean, it's something again. You know, people might not think about, but when you've got, you know, 10 puppies, 5 to 10 puppies that all look very, very similar when they're, you know, a couple of days old, having those collars, maybe not bow ties at that time, but collars maybe, or something to identify them, you know, it's just common sense, but people wouldn't really think about it. And you need to be able to, for your weighing and for all of those identification purposes, you need to be able to tell them apart.
And Nathan, you know how many red collars, blue collar pet names we get? Literally, if I try and search the name red collar, there's thousands of them.
On Orovet testing.
Oh, everyone. Because, yeah. You're trying to identify a black Labrador or whatever. It's red collar, purple collar. And some of them also paint the toenails with nail polish to help identify a particular colour, because sometimes string can come off.
Yeah, makes sense. Mm. Interesting.
But yeah, bow ties. Just anyone who hasn't looked, go to the Facebook page, and every dog has a coloured bow tie and literally loves wearing them, Nathan. There's, put one on mine, it sits there. I don't know how they pose with them on, but yeah, I think it made me laugh.
Joe's right paw profile is excellent. Yeah. There's a lot of great photos on there as well.
Sorry, we've kind of got off track with bow ties.
No, we haven't. No. Well, it's important. This is all part of Monty's Moodles.
Yeah. Absolutely. We do bow ties.
I love that walk through though, Joe, because it gave me such a vivid picture of, what is in your whelping area. And I think it shows for people that might not know a huge amount about breeding and the breeding world, is just the amount that goes on behind the scenes, the amount of, material. It's not just, a simple, matter of birthing a pup in a room, and, people think of these sort of, backyard operations. But when it's done well and professionally and properly, it is a complete, operation that is done with so much care and focus and resources. So it's great. I think it shows the dedication that goes into breeding well.
Yeah, thank you. And I think it's forever adapting as well. And it's always looking for things that you can improve on, because I don't think there's any perfect whelping area. My brain is about, 10 steps ahead of where I want to go. I've got, my outside area, I want to have it completely covered. I want to change. I've got awful grass at the moment in the new place. It's horrid. So I want to change all that. So there's constantly things that you should look at being able to do better. But back to the walking through with the actual kennels or inside whelping areas for each mother and puppies, looking into those, I've got a sort of a floor section where the puppies and mum are, and that's where the whelping box is originally. And then you actually have to have the ability for the mother to get away from the puppies. And that's something a lot of people miss as well or don't realise. So I've got a step up, a level up sort of coming off the wall where the mums can actually get up and they've got their own space, own bed, own water and food and things that the puppies can't get to. And then they've got a dog door outside as well. But that's another thing that I think a lot of people don't realise.
Nice. You give the mum some space from the kids.
Yeah, so that she needs to be able to get away. If they don't have that, it's important that they do. Some people use, like the little pools and things the mum can jump in and out. That works to a certain degree as well. So,
and Joe, doesn't Dad get into help at all?
Oh, Dad usually hates the puppies. I've got a couple of my boys enjoy the puppies, and I've got one of them that literally will just go every time a puppy goes near him. He's not interested at all. He just enjoys the work of making the puppies. Yes. That's it.
That's where his role ends.
Yeah, I was born as a wrong species here. I would have made a perfect dog would have been perfect for me. What, he just completely gnaws and just off he goes. Interesting.
George is thinking about renovating his home now to have his own dad space and can get away from the kids.
Well, why do you think they have the dens? I mean, that's the whole, it's the same thing, isn't it?
Same thing. Oh, interesting. Wow, I wouldn't have thought of that. But I can see what you mean. It is hard work, especially if you've got a large litter. You need a bit of a break. The puppies can be, I'm just thinking not only just all the cleaning you must do. Having to change the bedding and, can I ask you, what is the largest litter you've had?
So I've actually only had 6 as my largest litter. So I haven't been too bad. Usually because I breed smaller dogs, they have smaller litters. So I look at some people and I see they've got, 14 puppies and I'm like, gosh, how do they manage that? because I work, I think, I also do a lot of work on toilet training, and originally it's really hard. You're sort of grabbing puppies and putting them on the grass mat, and you know, over and over again until you've seen them win. I'm thinking, how do you do that with 14?
Just need a conveyor belt.
Yeah, absolutely. We'll just grass the whole thing.
So you tend to average six? Is that your what your
four to six? Yeah, four to six would be my average. Yeah.
Interesting. Yeah, I had someone who did come in and bring in 12 Labrador pups, and that was just so much work. And then let them all run out. And, you know, before you mentioned how they can hide in that, these little pups were hiding everywhere. I think we could better try and find two of them that were under a cupboard or something. So, yeah, six is a good number. Some breeds have larger numbers because that's just the way they go, I suppose. Like Labradors have large litters and bigger dogs, but yeah,
they have the space to carry the pups.
Hmm.
Yeah, and I think you'd obviously have to look at the size of your whelping areas, and that's why I think that it states different sizes for different size dogs.
Number and number.
Mine for my dogs is only I think 3.5 square meters is the minimum size, which is bigger than a playpen, by the way. But again, I think a lot of people don't realise that. They get a playpen and think that's big enough. It's not. But I think as the size of the dog gets up, the area obviously has to cater for.
Talking about logbooks, is that something you need to keep as part of the new code? Is that something you need to make sure you've got records on?
There's actually a huge amount that you have to have. So I won't go into it all because people can look up the code themselves, but there's a lot of record keeping. So you have to have evidence of pretty much everything. Every time my dogs have, I've got a folder for each of my dogs, and every time they have a litter, I've got certain sheets that I sort of stapled together with lots of different information, again, sort of, you know, the weight gains and showing that you're checking, that you're worming them every 2, 4, 6, 8 weeks. And you've also got to look at the microchip numbers and who the dogs go to, and making sure you've got proof of vaccination, proof. It's all sorts. And even just keeping for your day-to-day dogs, you know, that making sure that they are all wormed regularly and groomed. And yeah, so there's heaps of record people.
And you have to keep it going back. I think in the DPI, it's at least 3 years, but I'm sure most breeders would have it for every litter that they've bred ever. And I guess that's probably another part of the whelping area, is there's probably a document, you know, area as well, where you've got folders and sheets and you're writing weights down. And I'm sure all of that is part of the setup as well.
Absolutely.
Look, Joe, there's a question that my son always asks. It's the Dion doorbell question, and he wanted me to ask, Moodle and Cavoodle, what's the difference? Can you explain
temperament or what
Yeah, start with temperament. We know what they're both, where they're developed from. They're more about temperament. If I'm looking for a Moodle versus a Cavoodle.
Well, I think everyone will probably have answered this slightly differently, because it obviously depends on what you've experienced with both of the breeds. But personally, I find the Cavoodles are both very loving, both very friendly, love their people, very much inside dogs, want to be with their families. But the key differences for me is that Cavoodles tend to have that higher energy level. They definitely need more walks, more interaction, more stimulation. I find the Moodles a little bit more, on the whole, laid back. They probably are just as happy to watch TV all day as they are to go out and play. In fact, some of them can be on the lazy side. And they also, size-wise, they're a bit smaller. So generally your Moodles range is probably 3 to 7 kilos would be about where they would sit, whereas your Cavoodles, even though you get the occasional smaller one, they're more sort of 5 to 15 kilos. Bigger dog.
A Moodle would cost you more sort of for your Netflix subscriptions and things like that, because you're going to be watching TV, and a Cavoodle would cost you more on leads and going out.
Yeah.
So are they, I know some Cavoodles, I mean, you can vary, because you get a lot of variability in Cavoodles as well, from, you know, the amount of anxiety to the amount of barking, the amount of stimulation. Is it the same with the Moodles? To be honest, I don't see many Moodle breeders in general. It's not like a breed that I see as advertisers of the Cavoodle, hence why I'm asking. I'm keen to find out just what it is about them that sort of, well, what got you into the Moodle? What made you look at developing this breed?
Yeah. Well, as I said, the key thing when we got a Moodle and we just absolutely fell in love with the breed. And then obviously
Monty
I did
was the Moodle.
Monty was the Moodle. But the more research I did in regards to the temperaments of Maltese and Poodles. Now, you talked about barking before. I do find that the Moodles can be barkers because Maltese are terrible.
I've got
pure Maltese who are little barkers. But funnily...
And if anyone listening, it's the Maltese breed, not the Maltese from Malta.
Oh, yes. Yes, Maltese
just good to clarify that.
But you know what? They do like to talk a lot, the Maltese. Have you ever met a Maltese? They do like to talk. Yeah. They have got a... So maybe the breed is just talking just like...
Yeah, but they're also very full of themselves. Like Maltese are little dogs and... You know, with big minds.
Like the Maltese human then. No, they are full of themselves.
Maltese terriers, I just said it, are full of themselves. Like they've got the biggest personalities, whereas your Cavaliers are probably a little bit more laid back, which is funny because, as I said, when you mix them with a poodle, for some reason, I find that they seem to get the best of both traits of the dogs, and they don't seem to be as barky. So even though they can, any small dog can, let's be honest. So that was something I was worried about with the breed, but I haven't found that many of the actual Moodles, the mix between the two, are bad barkers, but probably a little bit more so because it's in the Maltese Terriers than the Cavoodles.
Just colour-wise, what's tends to be the most... We know in the Cavoodles, everyone likes that sort of
dark
apricot,
ruby,
the dark rear. What is it with the Moodle that you...
tend to get as dark of the red and things of the Moodles because obviously the Maltese Terriers are white. You do get, obviously depending on what you mix them with, but you do get sort of the apricot and white. You can get some slightly darker ones, but creams, phantom blacks. I've had a lot of parties like white with black patches or white with chocolate patches or pure black with white. So there's lots of different colours, but probably the only main difference is you don't tend to get that real ruby red. And if you do, it's probably more likely that the breeder has bred back to poodles two or three times. And so they'll be a higher percentage poodle and much less percentage Maltese.
And just another question, without sort of getting out there and promoting, how many Moodle breeders are there in Australia?
I don't know. I've got a lovely close-knit group of Moodle breeders that I work with. I think it's about six of us, and I know a few more. But I think they're out there. But ones that I would feel comfortable promoting and saying these guys are great or sending people to if I don't have puppies, there's probably less than what I can count.
That's what I was going to say. Yeah. I don't see many, to be honest.
Yeah, and we probably have most of them on Rightpaw, to be honest, because we've all met them. We've met them through Joe and have been able to.
There he goes again, Joe. There's every episode he manages to get Rightpaw in there. Plug him. I'm sure you do, Nathan.
Oh, you're yanking my chain a bit, George. I think if we tally up the Orovet mentions, there's probably a lot more mentions of Orovet.
Let's go. No, and you all sort of get on, you chat to each other and help each other out. You're not...
Absolutely. And that's another thing that I really recommend is you've got to interact with other breeders. That's essential. Okay. I'm constantly ringing my breeder friends and saying, even if you're talking, we share,
bow ties.
We share bow ties. We share contracts. We share information. I'm always looking on Facebook at people's whelping box, boxes and ideas and play areas and going, oh, I love that. And I go and buy that and sharing what I've got. I think it's so important because at the end of the day, it's not just about trying to sell dogs. It's about trying to promote this beautiful breed, and I'm very passionate about the Moodles and the Cavoodles, but probably my main passion is the Moodles, and they're not, as you say, there's not many people out there that do it and do it well, and they are honestly an incredible breed. They're the most beautiful dogs.
So there's no Moodle mafia we need to be worried about. They all seem to get on.
Yeah, definitely. I believe that we've all got each other's backs.
With the violin case to someone's door and.
Not yet.
Well, you know what, Nathan? The French Bulldogs started like that boutique, only 10 of them. You know, everyone got together, picnics. And look at them now, become an empire.
That's it. Well, I mean, they're your most popular breed on Orbit, aren't they?
Totally.
Well, this is the funny thing that you should mention, that this isn't French Bulldogs, but the only difficulty I find with the Moodle breed, and I think where people have got to be careful when buying Moodles, is there's not a lot of purebred Maltese around, like actual purebred Maltese. So, and if you ring any of the Maltese Terrier registered breeders, they won't sell to you because they obviously believe that it should just be purebreds, and that's fine. Like, everyone's entitled to their opinion, and there's fors and against both, so I'm not anti one or the other, but it's very, very difficult to get Maltese dogs. So that's probably been the biggest challenge for me, is, and I've actually ended up going the other way a bit, where I've got poodle females and found a really great Maltese Terrier male, because I just can't access a huge amount of the Maltese Terrier girls.
Yeah, it's a good point, because I guess, you know, public service announcement for all buyers that are looking for Moodles, you know, make sure that you're looking, that they are Moodles, and you know.
A lot of them aren't. There's a lot of them that they'll have Shih Tzu in them or other breeds in them, and people, you know, say that, oh, this is a Maltese, and they are not. So
don't get me started on these.
To get the genetics done,
yes. We got an aura of it.
No, I do not want people doing breed ID tests to verify Moodle. It's just a nightmare where it is.
Yeah.
You know, it's just a quick question, because it's been, is the Maltese Terrier from Malta?
No, it's not. And actually, you're going to stump me here, because I've looked into this before, because I was really surprised where it came from, and I can't think of it off the top of my head, but it doesn't come from Malta.
Really? Because no. I've been sitting here talking about, and a shout out to all our Maltese listeners, of course, Nathan, Maltese, and it's not from Malta. Can we quickly do a Google? Where is this Malta?
I'm looking at it as we speak, the Mediterranean Basin, which is basically South Central Europe. Although it says, first thing that comes up, despite the name, it has no verified historic or scientific connection to the island of Malta.
Malta. Ridiculous. Like, you know, no wonder that there's not many of. Anyway, interesting. I just thought, while you were chatting, I go, it's got to be. Why on earth would you even pick Maltese if it's got nothing to do with Malta? Anyway, welcome to how we name dogs and breeds.
Oh, it's, yeah, that's it. But, Joe, before we wrap up, there's something I have to ask you, which is, you know, on your rightful profile, you talk about your puppy fun zones, which I guess sort of is like the evolution of the whelping area. So they start in the whelping area, but then they grow up and it adapts and they go into these puppy fun zones. Can you tell us about what those are?
So, yes, absolutely. So I've got, at the moment, I've got two zones. So I've got my, what I call my, it's like a preschool, it's terrible, junior area and my senior area.
they graduate.
So they graduate to, they move up to the bigger area. So I think that's really important to sometimes work backwards. So you've got to ask yourself, what do you want when you hand over a puppy to somebody? What things do you want that puppy to have experience, and what kind of puppy do you want that to be? So things like, you know, socializing, things like, you know, being held, and sounds are really important. I play my dogs from 3 weeks old an app that has fireworks and all sorts of other things. But then there's also the experience of actually doing. So I want my puppies to be confident when they leave, and to feel like they, you know, are not anxious of being in new areas and new environments. So I have things like to do with heights, like they can walk up and down ramps. I've got things that wobble. I've got things that, you know, that swing. I've got different types of materials so they can hear different sounds as they go over and under things, through tunnels. I've got balls and lots of different basically things that they have to, I guess, gain the confidence to do. And then they move, you know, up into the more senior area, and obviously the things are a little bit higher and a bit more wobbly. But the key thing is just trying to prepare the puppies for the real world. And, you know, when they go into a house, they're going to, you know, hear clanking in the kitchen and various noises, and they're going to have different people going past. I mean, I walk out there with umbrellas and open and close them, and just, I just want them to be, as, what's the word, and to introduce them to as much as I can.
Exposed.
Exposed. I want them to be exposed. That's a great word. Yeah.
I think it's almost like that. Yeah, their world just keeps growing. So, you know, their world is the whelping area, and then their world gets a bit bigger and it becomes the outside area. And then it's like the Truman Show, like their world just keeps getting bigger. They don't know what they're exposed to.
It actually does. And that's a key thing. Like, honestly, every week I change the whelping area. So, you know, they start off in this little whelping box with my vet bed underneath, and it's changed every day. And it's just literally that tiny little space. And then I take away a wall, and then I put the grass mats in. And the third week, it's all about them getting off their bed, which I've then put in to go on the grass mats. And then I open up the third side of the whelping box. So they've got a whole area, but the whole floor is covered in puppy pads and grass mats. And then, you know, slowly that gets less and less and less until they've just got their grass mats. And then again, like when they're 4 weeks, they start going out into my my indoor play area, which is kind of safe. And then they graduate to the outdoor area. And so it just gets bigger and bigger and busier as they grow.
I thought setting up the car seat for your baby was hard when you first start. This whelping stuff is just so much work. It just, I don't know.
I put it this way. I don't know how people do it. I know, you know, I've heard of people that like work full time and breed dogs. And I don't personally know how to do it. Somehow they manage to make it work. And I'm sure their puppies, you know, maybe just as beautiful as mine. But I just think if you're going to do it and you're serious about it, you really need to look at what you can dedicate to it and the time involved and not just the setting up, but in the continual work that is. And you can also have, you know, if you've got four litters, you might have some that are 1 week old, some that are 4 weeks old, some that are 8 weeks old. And how do you, because you can't put them together because the 4 week old will try and bite the head off the 1 week old. So there's got to be different areas and different ways that you manage that. And you've got to be prepared and you've got to always be, have a routine in place.
So tell us maybe your most interesting whelping story.
Oh, probably my funniest one. And there was a lesson in this, which I'll tell you after. I have one girl who she's like the girl that we all hate, pregnancy hardly shows, gives birth so easily, gets her figure back beautifully. She's one of those dogs. She's just amazing. And anyway, she had about 3 days to go before she was due, and I put her in a whelping box that night. And at this stage, we didn't have our whelping area sorted, so she was in the house, but we'd set up a whelping area for her in the lounge, and the dogs were out. And she was just really unsettled. She just would not settle. My daughter said, "Come on, Mum, just let her sleep with me tonight. We can, you know, be strict on her tomorrow to stay in there." But she was out of sorts. So of course I've said, look, 3 days. Yep, she'll be fine. Off she goes to your bed. Well, you know what's going to happen, don't you?
Morning. What time was this?
This was luckily about 7 o'clock in the morning, but she literally woke up to the dog giving birth on her bed. There was blood everywhere. And I'm running in going, "Oh my goodness." And, you know, grabbed the dog and I sort of and the newborn puppy and got her into the whelp mirror, which was luckily not very far away. And, you know, blood was kind of spraying everywhere. It looked like a bit of a murder scene. it was terrible. But the lesson behind that was not all dogs show the same signs and giving birth, because I had missed it. I had totally missed it. I'd done the temperature checking, and that's not always guaranteed that you're going to get it. Sometimes you just miss the window where the temperature's dropped. And she wasn't showing any signs. And I've learned that about her now. She generally doesn't. Yeah, sure. She generally just suddenly goes, "Okay, it's time, pop them out." She doesn't do all the panting and everything. She just suddenly gives birth. It's crazy.
And Joe, your daughter's doing well? After
she hasn't been scarred for life.
I'm too traumatized.
Okay, that's good to know. She's coping. It wasn't like an exorcism, you know, waking up in the middle of this blood everywhere. You know, and look, what you're saying is exactly the same. Even in humans, some females are able just to give birth very easily literally, but some find it difficult. Yeah, so you've got to always be prepared. And, you know, here's a case was, and that's probably been your most interesting. How is she going? Have you still got this breeding bitch?
Yes, she's got one more litter to go.
And no more getting the bed you know, don't know unexpected, you now.
No, so we've learned from that. We don't do the sleeping in the beds before the, you know, before a few days before they whelp. Not worth the risk.
Gosh. And Joe, you know, we ask this of all of our guests, but, you know, if you had one message to leave, you know, to our listeners, to all of our breeders out there in particular about, you know, their whelping area or about, you know, a message you wanted to leave them with, you know, what would that message be?
I guess preparation is key. Prepare for any eventuality. And also just learn, like constantly research, learn, ask questions. Don't be afraid. I even, you know, rang the RSPCA today and said to them, you know, I'm not due for an audit for another few months, but can you come and see what I've done and see if it's okay? Like, I want them to come and tell me if I'm doing something wrong, if there's something I've overlooked. So just be open to feedback and be prepared to continuously develop and get better. I think that's the key.
Yeah, I agree. So I've learned a bit. Be prepared. And, you know, your whelping box or your nesting box or your whelping pen should be designed to protect your puppies during birth at the early life by keeping them sort of safe and contained safely, protect them from cold or heat again. So temperature is important. And the safety of making sure the size is the right, so there's, you don't crush or smother them by the mother. They're sort of the key messages I've heard throughout the conversation. And, of course, that a Maltese is not from Malta.
Yes.
That was a mind-blowing
fact for me.
It was for me. But it's been interesting. And you know what? It's like I said, anyone who gets this puppy gets the end product but doesn't actually see the work that goes into it beforehand. It's... And I keep saying this, I had, you know, my dog wasn't even D6 when I got a Mary, and she came into season once and had little, and I couldn't cope with just little specks of blood here and there, let alone when you've got, you know, you had this birth on a bed. I couldn't cope with.
Yeah, all the children that have been scarred and sacrificed to get your puppy. Oh, gosh. And George, do we have the Bible handy with you?
What I thought we'd do, Nathan, is we'd make this a double whammy. We'd make this the educational part of the prize, but also the prize.
The prize, of course. I was wondering when you were going to slip the prize in, but you've got to keep it fresh every episode.
Dude, I want to make sure that the people, that they've got to listen right till the end. So the prize is, Joe, and unfortunately no Myrtle breeders can email me with it would literally deplete every right poor client if I said no Myrtle breeders. So let's just say, Joe, unfortunately you can't. So you've got to email me on the 30th of January. I don't know what day it is, Joe. I don't care. We don't care. And I want you to email me at between 11:30 and 11:35 a.m. Eastern Daylight Saving Time. We make this tough, Joe.
It makes it tougher.
And it's so great when I get people email. I've got a bit flexible. Between 11:30 and 11:35 a.m. Eastern Daylight Savings Time. And you've got to email me with the disease that Joe has picked out of the genetic disease, common diseases of dog Bible that I have here. Oh. So the 30th of January. Between 11:30 and 11:35 a.m.
Joe's written it down. I can see.
I know she was
doing it. I can't do it, but.
Don't worry. You'll get your friend. And, you know, of course, what do you win, Joe? I know what you're asking. It's a return trip to. No, it's.
To Malta. No.
No. Well, it's
a duvet. It's a duvet that once was used for puppy breeding.
Puppy breeding, yes. No, it's. Sort of this sort of, it's a full breed profile to the value of $195, a voucher that we give out to any person. So it's great value, a full breed profile. And I can tell you the Myrtle full breed profile is packed full of phenotypes and genetic diseases you need to screen for. But anyway, so this is now your part of the show, Joe, where you need to pick a number between 1 and 170 for us. And then that number will be the genetic disease that we read and educate our listeners about.
Beautiful. I'm going to go with 77.
Oh. Any particular reason? Number of pups you've bred?
Just like the number 7.
I don't think we've had 77, so...
No, we haven't. And you're keeping a good track on... Ooh. Okay, good. It's a brief one, and it's called Hereditary Myopathy, also known as Autosomal Recessive Muscular Dystrophy. And it's a rare inherited disease, and well done, Joe, you've avoided the Moodle, for the Labrador Retrievers. One of the most popular breeds worldwide. Mm. Very rare, though. Causes muscle weakness due to the lack of type 2 muscle fibers. First signs are in a puppy with the disease. It's sort of a bunny hopping gait the puppy will show around 5 months of age. The muscles become atrophied, although the dog still remains bright and alert. And usually conditions stabilize around 6 to 8 months. Sometimes people confuse it with exercise-induced collapse, but this has nothing to do with any exercise. DNA testing is available, and we include it in all our Labrador Retriever and Labradoodle full breed profiles. So no excuses, but it is rare. I don't think I've seen a dog that's tested anything part negative in my last 10 years. But, yep, that's page 77, Hereditary Myopathy or Muscular Dystrophy.
That's good. I think, I have noticed that pop up quite a bit in the Labrador full breed profiles, but as you said, very, very rare, very rare.
I see one. I'm sure the band will come to the person's place and start playing that we found a carrier, let alone a positive, just something that's rare. And we can have another podcast about diseases and just how rare they are. Some of these diseases I've never seen in 20 years and maybe were only found in an isolated population and have never been outside of that breed. So anyway, lovely. I have enjoyed today a lot, Joe. I've learned not only about whelping plans, but the Moodle, which was the key questions that Dean wanted me to ask about this Moodle. Let's get more people loving the Moodle, I say.
Absolutely. Hear, hear.
Yeah. No, brilliant. Thanks, Joe, and thanks for joining. And what I'll do as well is for anyone interested, I will include in the show notes a link to Monty's Moodles, to their Facebook page and their Ripeport profile. And Joe includes some great photos on there, and you can see the bow ties in person as well.
It is just, if anyone wants to see dogs tortured, I mean dogs wearing bow ties, please visit Joe. And maybe Joe can help out with where she gets them from. I know, are they silk, Joe, these bow ties, or...?
I wouldn't have a clue.
You need to start doing.
But I have to be honest, they're actually way too big, and I have to tie knots in the back of them so that they fit.
They look really big on them. That's what I noticed. It's this big bow tie. No, don't change them.
No, they look great. Well, Joe, thank you again. Thanks for being on the podcast. And George, once again, it was a great episode, episode 15, and going strong.
Yeah. Thanks, everyone. Thanks, Joe. Thanks.
Thank you. Thanks very much.